A halfway decent jobs report is out today.
But will it be enough to wash away the worry?
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, happy Friday. I'm Steve Chiotakis.
It's Friday, yeah. Yes, it is. And I'm Bob Moon in for Jeremy Hobson. It's the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from marketplace.org. It's Friday, August 5th.
While you're paying those student loans, your college education is also supposedly paying you back.
Arab countries aren't donating to the Palestinian Authority like they used to, and that's hurting the territory's economy.
And later, hide your money. The bank wants to deposit it and then charge you for that. Ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Carbonite Business, providing automatic online backup solutions for small businesses. Learn more and receive a free trial at Carbonite.com with code Marketplace.
The economy added 117,000 jobs in July, while the nation's unemployment rate fell slightly to 9.1%. That's according to the Labor Department, out with its monthly employment report today. Hilda Solis is U.S. Secretary of Labor in the Obama administration, and she's with us now to talk about this morning's report. Madam Secretary, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Not bad. 117,000 jobs. But that's not enough to grow us out of this high unemployment rate, is it?
Well, I would say that, you know, overall, when you look back at what we've created in the last 17 months, we've actually added 2.4 million private sector jobs. And, you know, the last 2 months they had to revise up those numbers. So, you know, on an average, we're not doing too bad, but we still need to do more. And that's why the president is out today speaking about helping to create jobs, getting the businesses to open up their doors for some of our returning veterans, which we know in Los Angeles and California, we had a large number of our young people and men and women serving in the military that are going to be coming home looking for jobs.
Hidden in those numbers, Madam Secretary, is the fact that the long-term unemployed have just given up. Stop looking for work. What do you say to them?
They can't stop looking. We need to keep them to continually look for work, but also go visit our one-stop centers that we have. We have 3,000 of them, many of them in California. They're free services to get your resume up and going. Talk to a job coach there. Also look at where other job openings are available and what kind of training programs can help prepare you. All that is free, and we make it available by people. They can go on the Internet. They can go to www.dol.gov. They can also call toll-free 1-866-4-USA-DOL.
What do you say to critics who charge the White House is impeding job growth because of too much regulation, financial regulation or environmental regulation?
I don't think that's accurate. I think that those are stories that we continually hear from certain parts of the different political aisle here. I think what's really happening is we've been able to help create more jobs than we've seen in the previous administration. I mean, there's just no comparison. And regulations actually help us to level the playing field because it actually helps those businesses that are playing by the rules not to be taken advantage of or shortchanged by those businesses that don't pay taxes and don't treat their employees well or don't want to spend any extra money to make their businesses safe. And what have you. So I think those are some of the arguments that people need to be aware of.
But you don't think there's over-regulation going on?
I know that, you know, that's a constant speaking point for the opposition. I think what we really have to do is get off, our businesses have to get off the duff, the ones that have a large amount of money that they're sitting on and help to create jobs. Everyone needs to share in this recovery, and certainly there's been enough pain to spread around, but we think that there is an opportunity for businesses to come forward and to really help restore that faith in our American workers by hiring up people, and we're doing it by giving them tax breaks. We need an extension of the payroll tax. We need to also look at R&D development, infrastructure investment, so we can create jobs in construction to address our problems that we have with our old bridges and highways. We can put people back to work. These are bipartisan issues, by the way.
I know we just signed a debt ceiling deal earlier this week, complete with a lot of spending cuts, right, to reduce the deficit.
Over a period of time, 10 years.
Over a period of time, but that's going to affect hiring in some way, won't it?
Well, I think it depends. That they'll be looked at in terms of what happens in Department of Defense. Yes, it will have some impacts on private contractors, I would imagine. And then, yes, we need to be very clear where those cuts are actually made, because we don't want to continue to add to this recession and take us deeper into a recession. We need to make sure the recovery continues to work its way through, and we're starting to see that. But, you know, there's so many factors out there that we have to consider. But one thing I will say that happened this week that was a good sign of hope, and that was that the Senate is taking up the FAA piece of legislation that'll put 4,000 people back to work in addition to 70,000 construction workers.
This is the stalemate at the Federal Aviation Administration, right?
Right. And finally they broke that through, thank goodness. But we don't need to be taking those kinds of actions. We need to be proactive and looking at jobs. We need to make sure that we get more people back to work. And we've got a stubbornly high number of people that have been out of work for 26 weeks, about 8 million. We need to address what their concerns are to make sure that we have them aptly trained and that they understand that we're coming into a new phase here of economic development that's going to require a different set of skills. And a lot of that is going to be available through places like the Department of Labor and our one-stop centers that we provide around the country.
When the administration was negotiating with Republicans on the debt ceiling deal, why didn't they put forth more effort to get more people for some sort of stimulus or get more people to work? Do you think there was some lacking going on there?
I think that the other side of the aisle didn't want to hear it. All they wanted to do was continue to cut more programs and not raise revenue. And obviously there's a big split, a big divide in our country right now where people do want to see that everybody pay their fair share, including those 2% of the very wealthy that haven't had to pay the same amount or percentage of tax as, say, other middle-class and low-income workers have had to pay in terms of proportion.
Why do you think companies are holding back on hiring? Is it a lack of capital or a lack of confidence?
I think it could be a factor of both, but I do think that, you know, we should move on now. We took care of the debt ceiling argument. Now that's done. Now we need to both look and work together on job creation.
Labor Secretary Hilda Solis joining us this morning from Washington. Madam Secretary, thank you.
Thank you, and a big hello to all your listeners in Los Angeles.
With us, as he is every Friday at this time, Christopher Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial. What about it, Chris? Strongest job growth since April. Is this going to be enough to change the mood on Wall Street?
Well, it definitely changes the mood, because the mood yesterday was downright recessionary. 117,000 new jobs, that's not great, but it's pretty good. There were 54,000 jobs revised into May and June, and that almost doubled the gains originally reported. And then there were also 40,000 or so government jobs cut, so 154,000 new jobs in the private sector. That's pretty good, too.
But what about the fact that the lower unemployment rate was due largely to folks giving up their hunt for a job?
Well, and that's the sort of deeper underlying meaning here. 117,000 jobs is pretty good by recent standards, but it's not at all good by historical standards. We're just not doing enough in this economy to pull the unemployment rate down, except as people become discouraged. I do think eventually that's going to change, but we have to keep the economy going for another year or so before we get there.
We'll keep our fingers crossed. Chris Lowe at FTN Financial, thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So, question, where are policymakers in Washington focusing their job-boosting hopes? On foreign trade, apparently. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has that.
President Obama started talking jobs right after the debt ceiling deal this week. He wants Congress to pass pending free trade deals with South Korea, Colombia, and Panama. Boost exports, he says, and U.S. companies will hire more workers to produce those goods. Jean Shaheen, Democratic senator from New Hampshire, would like Congress to do even more to create jobs.
Get an infrastructure bank for roads and bridges, support job training.
But with budget cuts coming, more government spending is probably a pipe dream. So Shaheen backs trade deals, too.
This is an opportunity that doesn't cost a lot of money.
Spend a bit to help businesses that want to export more, and you're done. Will it create jobs? I asked Jeff Schott at the Peterson Institute.
In terms of the overall U.S. economy, it's not that big a deal. But when you have such a large amount of unemployment, every little bit helps.
The U.S. Chamber of Commerce says 380,000 jobs are tied to the free trade deals. That's just a fraction of the 8 million lost in the recession. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Well, provided you can find a job, it's no surprise you'll probably make more if you go to college. That's nothing new, but a new report sponsored by the Lumina Foundation finds the college payoff is getting even bigger despite the high price. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott reports.
A worker with a bachelor's degree makes 84% more over a lifetime than someone with just a high school diploma. Lumina Foundation President Jamie Marisotis says even at its most expensive, college still pays.
Unemployment rates are much lower for people with college degrees, and wages are considerably higher. So from a variety of different perspectives, getting a college degree is now more important than ever.
But the payoff isn't the same for everyone. African Americans and Latinos with master's degrees earn less than the average white person with just a bachelor's. Georgetown University's Tony Carnevale co-wrote the report. He says the conventional wisdom is that blacks and Latinos go into occupations that pay less.
But what comes through here very strongly is, irrespective of the occupation, there's a difference in earnings that we can't account for.
Skeptics of the idea that everyone should go to college say there won't be enough high-skilled jobs for all those graduates. But Lumina's Marisotis says educated people help create jobs. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
New Hampshire police are looking for a man they're calling the remorseful robber.
Remorseful
Bob. He is remorseful because the thief stole $90 and a GPS device from a woman's purse that she had laying in a shopping cart in a grocery store.
Okay.
And he picked it up and he ran away with it. The man apparently felt so bad about what he'd done. He later returned the items. He went to the woman's house. Apparently, he from her wallet knew where she lived. Gave her her $90 back with $10 interest. Got her a new cord for the GPS device that
he had
stolen.
Nice.
Right. And he also left a note before he ran off that said he was sorry, he had fallen on hard times, and signed it, "Stupid."
Oh.
This podcast is supported by Carbonite Business, online automatic backup designed for small businesses. Carbonite Business automatically backs up files to a secure offsite location. In the event of a hard drive crash, virus, or other problem, files can easily be recovered. More information and a free trial by visiting Carbonite.com using the code Marketplace.
Well, the markets, Bob, as you and I have been talking about for the past few weeks, have been very, very volatile. And you might want to keep your stock market seatbelts on because we're going up and down and up and down.
Okay, there's click.
Click, exactly. There's nothing rational about fear and how investors react to certain pieces of news. Well, Marketplace's Gregory Warner reports why asking why is so hard to do.
You sit there watching your 401k dribble down. Of course you're going to ask yourself why. Why did the market tank? So you turn on the TV.
It's obvious that Europe is the story here. We're seeing banks liquidating.
Back home, weekly unemployment claims showed little improvement.
Fear took over.
We're hearing words like alarming, panic, devastating.
But what exactly were we so afraid of yesterday? As David Hefty of Hefty Wealth Partners points out.
I mean, none of this stuff's new. We know about all the major stories, right? We already know about debt in Greece. We already know about the debt problem in the United States.
Yeah, we know all that. So why does the market choose Thursday, August 4th to plunge 500 points? Lawrence White is an economist at NYU Stern School of Business.
I mean, the markets are always trying to anticipate what's going to happen tomorrow, but also trying to figure out what do other people think is going to happen.
He says it's not that millions of investors all decided yesterday, okay, time to panic. It's more like a lot more people thought that others would. The thing we have to fear is the fear of fear itself. I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
Today, as they do every Friday, cattlemen across Oklahoma are bringing their animals to auction. This year, though, a nearly year-long drought is forcing a record number of animals onto the auction block. From KOSU in Oklahoma City, Michael Cross reports.
The sun rises over a sea of cattle at the Elk City Livestock Auction. More than 4,000 animals await the public sale, which will take nearly 24 hours to complete. Charles Hickey is the owner of the Elk City sale barn. He's auctioning off more cattle than ever before. The drought has caused the price of hay to spike, and many ranchers can't afford to maintain large herds.
They can save a little money and put something together maybe for down the road. bad, sad thing is there's a lot of these guys here that's older guys that's not going to be back. 80-year-old guys, and he sells his herd, and he won't ever own another cow, probably.
There is some good news, though. The price of cattle has never been higher during a drought. Scott DeWald is the executive vice president of the Cattlemen's Association. He credits several different reasons for the higher price. First off, southeastern states like Georgia, Mississippi, and Florida are coming out of a severe drought with the lowest population of livestock since 1952. Many ranchers there are trying to replenish their herds. There's also been a 27% increase in beef exports, especially to Asian markets like China and Japan.
Probably the big driver is the value of the U.S. dollar. When the value of the U.S. dollar is low, it's cheaper for them to buy our product than maybe from Australia or somewhere else. So the value of the dollar plays a huge role in that.
Western Oklahoma rancher Will Street is participating in his third auction this year. He's shrinking his herd to about 25 from an average of about 70. He says for now, he's going to take what he can and try to survive with the young heifers he still has in stock.
It'll be a while before you can get a cash from them, but it looks like the drought's going to hang on for a while.
Climatologists say the drought might not come to an end until fall unless there's a perfectly positioned tropical storm to bring much-needed rain. In Oklahoma City, I'm Michael Cross for Marketplace.
To the Middle East now, like a lot of governments around the world, the Palestinian Authority is tightening its belt big time. Back in July, the authority cut government workers' salaries in half. That's because promised donations haven't come through. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports.
In the garden of a tea house in Nablus, Khalid Abad is playing backgammon with a friend. He used to come here almost every day, but he can't afford to come that often anymore. He works for the Palestinian Authority's health department, and like all public employees here, he only got half his salary.
I've cut everything in my life in half.
Khalid Abad isn't only cutting back at the tea house. He stopped paying for his telephone, and other bills are piling up, too.
The landlord has been asking me about the rent. I'm doing what the Palestinian Authority is doing to us. I'm making promises.
The Palestinian government does have money. It's a question of how it can spend it. 40 minutes from the tea house in Ramallah, construction workers are finishing three big buildings that'll house government offices. Asad Khatib, who's the spokesman for the Palestinian Authority, says the government can't stop construction to pay salaries.
The room of maneuvering is limited because most of the projects, especially infrastructure projects, are financed by earmarked money coming from specific donors for specific projects.
Among the donors who haven't paid up are Arab countries, which need the money at home to deal with the ongoing unrest in this region. Khatib says whatever the reasons, the missing salaries are hurting the Palestinian economy. That's because the government is the biggest employer here, about 150,000 workers. But about 1 million people are thought to depend on those salaries.
The salaries are a significant part of the liquidity that is usually pumped into the market. And when this liquidity is shrinked by half, it will affect the demand in the market.
Rolling the dice onto the backgammon board, Khalid Abad, the health inspector, says the government is playing with his life. He says, we're their people. The government has to take responsibility. In Nablus, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Finally, Steve, can you believe this? Can you top this?
Mm-hmm.
There's a bank that's going to start charging customers to hang on to their money.
Wait a second. I thought that was a nice service that they did, right?
The Bank of New York Mellon deals with big financial institutions, so we're talking deposits of more than $50 million.
Wow.
And the bank claims they can't make money on the money now because interest rates are so low and that sort of thing. But has it really gotten so bad that banks can actually charge deposit fees?
Deposit fees.
I've got some space under my mattress. If you're interested, you can trust me, you can trust the bank, right?
I think I trust Bob Moon.
In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great weekend. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too.
Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.